Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling something pretty fundamental for anyone investing in mutual funds.
Yeah, it's about a choice that can really impact your long-term wealth. We're talking about direct versus regular mutual fund plans.
Exactly. And this deep dive, well, we're aiming to give you a clear path, a shortcut really, to understanding how investing directly can keep your costs down and hopefully your returns up.
That's right. We're drawing on a guide that's pretty comprehensive, covers the definitions, sure, but also the practical steps, the risks, basically everything you need to know to get started with direct mutual funds or DMFs.
So mutual funds themselves, great concept, right? Pooling money, getting diversification across stocks, bonds, whatever, easy.
Absolutely brilliant for accessibility.
But this choice, direct versus regular, it feels like the critical fork in the road. Because it's about cutting out the middleman.
It really is. And that seemingly small decision saves you potentially substantial fees over the years. It compounds.
So let's break that down. What is the difference?
Okay, so regular mutual funds, RMFs. You typically buy those through a distributor. It could be a bank, a broker, an advisor.
Someone who helps you pick and purchase.
Exactly. And that person or entity earns a commission. The thing is, that commission isn't usually a separate fee you see up front. It's baked right into the fund's annual running costs, the expense ratio.
Ah, so it makes the RMF inherently more expensive.
Correct. Now, direct mutual funds, DMFs, you skip the middleman.
Oh.
You buy directly from the asset management company, the AMC, or the fund house itself, usually online through their website or maybe an approved investment platform.
And because there's no distributor commission.
The expense ratio is lower. Mm. Simple as that. You're getting the exact same fund, managed by the same people, investing the same assets. It's just cheaper.
Okay, let's talk about that cost difference.
Yeah.
It's often, what, maybe 1%, 1.5% difference in the annual expense ratio?
Sometimes less, sometimes a bit more, but yeah, in that ballpark.
And honestly, 1%. It sounds tiny. Why should someone, especially if they're busy, get hung up on such a small number?
Well, it seems small in year one, but investing is a long game, right? We're talking compounding.
Ah, the magic of compounding. Or the tyranny of it, if it's fees eating away at your returns.
Precisely. That 1% isn't just 1% of your initial investment each year. It's 1% of your growing investment over 10, 15, 20 years. That adds up significantly.
So the money you paid in fees isn't just gone, it's also all the future growth that money could have generated.
You've got it. Our source material gives a clear example. Imagine two people invest the same amount, say 1,000 SAR, for 10 years. Same fund, same market conditions.
Okay.
The person in the DMF, just because their annual costs are maybe 1% lower, ends up with a noticeably higher final amount. We're talking potentially thousands of reals difference over that period.
Wow. Okay. So it's not negligible at all in the long run.
Not at all. The core idea is simple. You want as much of your money as possible working for you, compounding for your benefit, not leaking out in commissions year after year.
That makes the financial case very compelling. But you mentioned other benefits earlier, beyond just saving money. What else do you get with DMFs?
Yeah, there's more to it. You gain, I'd say, control and transparency and independence.
How so? Control.
Well, with an RMF, you often rely heavily on your distributor's advice. Which funds to pick, when to buy or sell, and sometimes, let's be honest, their recommendations might be influenced by which funds pay them a higher commission.
Hmm. A potential conflict of interest there.
Could be. With a DMF, you are in the driver's seat. You do the research. You pick the funds based on what you think is best performance, risk level, alignment with your goals. You decide when and how much to invest. No intermediary filtering your choices.
So more direct responsibility, but also more direct control.
Exactly. And that leads to transparency. You can see the whole universe of direct plans available from a fund house or on a platform.
Whereas with a regular plan, maybe the advisor only shows you a limited list.
Potentially, yes. The visibility might be limited to the funds they're set up to sell. With direct, it's all laid out.
Okay, let's summarize that maybe if we compare them. Expense ratio.
Lower for DMF, higher for RMF due to commissions.
Control.
Direct investor chooses with DMF. Intermediary often influences decisions with RMF.
Transparency.
Full visibility, usually with DMF, can be limited with RMF.
And long-term returns.
Generally, higher potential with DMF simply because of the lower cost drag.
Accessibility. How do you actually buy these DMFs?
Primarily online, through the fund house's own website or portal, or through various online investment platforms and apps that specifically offer direct plans.
All right, this sounds, well, pretty good on paper. Lower costs, more control. But now the big question, if I'm cutting out the advisor, How hard is it to actually do this, to get started?
That's the key practical point, isn't it? The sources suggest it's actually quite straightforward these days, mostly online. But it does require, you know, getting your ducks in a row. There's a process.
Okay, let's walk through that. The guide mentions six steps. Step one.
Choose your platform. You need to find an online portal, maybe a fundhouse website, or a dedicated investment app that explicitly offers direct plans. Not all do.
And look for useful tools there too, I imagine, since you're your own advisor now.
Definitely. Good platforms will have comparison tools, performance trackers, maybe some research resources. You need the right toolkit.
Okay, platform chosen. Step two. Sounds like admin. KYC.
Yep, know your customer. It's a mandatory verification process for security and regulatory compliance. Think anti-money laundering.
What does that usually involve? Sending in lots of paper.
Not usually anymore. It's mostly eKYC now. You'll likely need to upload digital copies of your ID, maybe proof of address. Sometimes there's a quick video verification or a selfie involved to match you to your documents.
Sounds a bit fiddly, but necessary.
It is, but it's generally a one-time thing per platform and helps protect everyone, usually quite quick.
Right. Steps one and two done. Now, step three, research. This sounds like the crucial part.
It absolutely is. This is where you can't afford to rush. You're picking the investments yourself now.
So what should I be looking at? Just past performance? This fund did well last year, so I'll buy it.
No, definitely not just that. Past performance gives you some context on how a fund behaved, its volatility maybe, but it's famously not a guarantee of future results.
Right, the standard disclaimer. So what else?
You need to dig deeper.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the fund's objective. Is it growth, income, balanced? Does it match your objective? Look at the underlying assets, check the expense ratio. Even among direct plans, some are cheaper than others.
What about risk metrics?
Crucial. Look at things like the Sharpe ratio that tells you about risk-adjusted return. How much return are you getting for the level of risk taken? Maybe the standard deviation to gauge volatility. And understand any exit loads fees if you sell too soon.
Okay, so proper homework requirement.
This step takes time and effort.
Got it. Once the research is done, step four is about strategy. Lump sum or SIP?
Right. How are you going to invest? Got a chunk of cash ready? A lump sum might work. But for most people, especially starting out...
The SIP. Systematic investment plan.
Exactly. This is usually the most practical approach. You invest a fixed amount, say 500 SAR, whatever fits your budget at regular intervals, maybe monthly.
And the benefit there is?
It's called dollar cost averaging. You automatically buy more units when the price is low and fewer units when the price is high. It smooths out the effects of market ups and downs.
Takes the guesswork out of timing the market, which is notoriously hard.
Impossible, some would say. And the great thing is, many funds allow you to start an SIP with a relatively small amount, making it really accessible. Consistency is key.
That accessibility point is huge. Okay, so research done, strategy chosen, let's say SIP. Step five is making the actual investment.
Yep, pulling the trigger. This part's usually simple online. Enter the amount, choose your payment method, confirm, done.
Seems easy enough.
Yeah.
Which brings us to step six, monitoring and review. This sounds ongoing.
It has to be. Remember, you're saving the advisor's fee, but you're taking on the advisor's job of oversight.
So how often should I be checking my investments? Am I glued to the screen every day?
Please don't. That's a recipe for anxiety and bad decisions. Checking too often encourages reacting to short-term market noise.
Okay, so what's reasonable?
The sources suggest a more disciplined approach. Maybe check performance quarterly or semi-annually, but the real review should probably be annual.
And what am I looking for in that annual review?
You're checking if the funds are still performing reasonably relative to their benchmark and peers, and more importantly, if they still align with your financial goals and your risk tolerance. Have your circumstances changed? If not, and the fund is doing what it's supposed to, you probably don't need to make drastic changes. Avoid churning.
Stay the course.
Yep.
Unless something fundamental changes.
Okay.
That discipline monitoring, though, leads us straight into the potential downsides, the risks.
Yes, there's always a trade-off.
We've established DMFs can mean higher potential returns because of lower costs, but they clearly demand more from the investor. You mentioned the time commitment for research.
That's risk number one. The self-management burden. It takes time. It takes effort. You need to stay informed, do the research, make the decisions. There's no advisor holding your hand or sending you recommendations.
And this raises that question, doesn't it? If the fee saving is, say, 1%, but I end up spending, I don't know, 50 or 100 hours a year researching and monitoring, what's my time worth? Is that 1% saving actually worth the hassle for everyone?
That is the critical calculation you need to make for yourself. For someone with a very large portfolio, 1% is a huge absolute amount of money, so the time spent is likely very well compensated.
Right.
For someone starting with smaller amounts, that time cost versus the fee saving, well, the equation looks different. You have to genuinely be willing and perhaps even enjoy putting in that effort.
So if the market suddenly drops 10%, I'm the one who needs to decide whether to panic, hold, or buy more. No professional to call for reassurance or advice.
Exactly. Which brings us neatly to risk number two, market volatility. All mutual funds, direct or regular, go up and down in value. That's normal.
But without an advisor acting as a buffer.
New investors especially need the discipline and the, frankly, the stomach to ride out those downturns. Selling in a panic locks in losses and completely undermines the long-term benefit of lower fees. Patience is vital.
Okay. And risk three, you mentioned research earlier.
Fund selection risk. If you do a poor job with step three, the research. If you pick funds that consistently underperform or don't match your risk profile.
Then the lower fees don't help much if the underlying investment is bad.
Precisely. You haven't saved money overall. You might have just amplified a poor investment choice because you were doing it yourself. Diversification helps mitigate this. Don't put all your eggs in one type of fund. Spread the risk.
Makes sense. Now, for what might be the biggest hurdle for many? Risk four, emotional investing.
Yes, the human element.
Without that advisor acting as a sort of behavioral coach, how do you stop yourself from making impulsive decisions driven by fear when the market tumbles or greed when it's soaring? I know I'd be tempted to check constantly during volatile times.
It's incredibly difficult. This is perhaps the biggest argument for having an advisor for some people. Managing your own emotions is tough.
So that self-management burden isn't just time, it's also emotional labor.
Absolutely. Discipline is the key word again. Having a clear, long-term plan that you wrote down before the panic started and sticking to it. Easier said than done, but essential for DMF success. Lower costs mean nothing if you panic sell at the bottom.
Okay, so acknowledging these risks, the time, the volatility, the emotional challenge. If someone decides, yes, I'm up for this, how should they think about building their portfolio? Just fill it with DMFs.
Well, DMFs are great for accessing market growth cost effectively, but they are, by nature, linked to market movements, which can be volatile. So for a truly resilient portfolio...
They balance.
Exactly. You might want to balance those potentially higher growth, higher volatility DMFs with other types of assets, things that behave differently.
Yeah.
Things that have a lower correlation to the stock market, maybe high-quality bonds, or perhaps certain types of stable income-generating assets, like, say, some real estate-backed opportunities. The idea is to smooth out the overall ride of your portfolio.
So use DMFs for the growth engine, perhaps, but blend them with steadier investments for ballast.
That's a good way to put it. It's about building a portfolio that lets you sleep at night, benefiting from the low costs of DMFs without being entirely exposed to market swings. Stability plus cost efficiency.
Right. So wrapping this up, it feels like direct mutual funds offer a really clear, potentially very rewarding path for investors. Lower costs, direct control.
Definitely powerful levers for building wealth, especially when combined with consistency. That example of just 500 SAR a month, if you stick with it in a decent low-cost direct plan averaging, say, 10% over the long term, that's how significant wealth gets built. That 1% saving really adds up over decades.
But it comes with significant responsibilities attached. The research, the discipline, the emotional control.
You are the fund manager of your own portfolio, essentially.
Which leads us back to that provocative thought, that personal calculation we touched on earlier. You need to factor in the time and effort required.
Yes.
So think about this. Calculate the actual monetary value of that 1%, or whatever the difference is, annual fee saving on your specific portfolio size. Then estimate the hours you realistically need to spend each year on research, monitoring, and decision making to do it properly and avoid costly mistakes.
Okay.
Now, compare the two. At what point, what portfolio size, or what personal value you place on your free time, does the effort involved in doing it yourself with DMFs shift from being purely a smart financial move to becoming something more like a dedicated hobby you need to actually enjoy?
That's the final layer, isn't it? Is managing your investments something you find engaging? Or is it a chore you gladly pay 1% to avoid? Knowing that about yourself is key to making the right choice between direct and regular.
A crucial piece of self-knowledge for any investor. Lots to think about there.